105.9 Academy FM.
BizConnect.
Promoting and connecting businesses in Kent and around the world.
Tweet us at Kent_biz.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another edition of BizConnect, the bi-weekly business radio show with myself, Martin White, and my fabulous co-host,
Tracy Westall.
Tracy, lovely to see you on this beautiful sunny morning.
I know, it's lovely blue sky out there today, which is really nice compared to the weather we've had at the weekend.
It's a case of sort of dodging the showers at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, just a bit.
Or more like the sort of the torrential typhoon downpour that we had on Saturday night, where I
know,
live anyway.
I know, it was quite biblical,
biblical,
I would say.
Yes, what a good word, biblical. Now it's half term.
Yes.
So we've got a whole new audience today. We've got all these wonderful people sitting at home listening to us. Unfortunately, we're not going to be offering tips on things to do in the half term holidays.
No. No.
But we are going to be sharing some topical business news and perhaps some other news and information that people might want to act on.
That's
while,
right.
While they've got a little bit of time this week. So
exactly.
That's what we're going to be doing. We've got two fabulous guests coming up as well, haven't we on the show? Who have we got with us today?
We've got Jackie Offham from JJ Systems.
Lovely, brilliant.
And we've also got my partner in crime.
Yes, we have.
Yes, Kevin Artlett from Pecunia. So it'd be very interesting and very strange, I think, to interview my own business partner.
Yeah, well, be nice. Be nice to him.
I'll try.
Otherwise he won't talk to you again. So I think what we'll do is we'll play a little bit of music and then we will come straight back after this.
105.9 Academy FM.
BizConnect.
Promoting and connecting businesses in Kent and around the world.
Tweet us at Kent_biz.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to BizConnect with Tracy Westall and myself, Martin White. We should mention, by the way, if you'd like to tweet us, you can do at Kent_biz. Let us know what you're up to today. Or perhaps, Tracy, you've got a burning business question.
Well, yes, most definitely.
Why not?
Come on board.
Mm. But tell us, what's going on this week that people might be interested in a kind of business context to start
with? Well, there's quite a few sort of events and things going on, webinars and new startup workshops. One I wanted to pick up on really was an initiative with Let's Do Business, Lisa Young and Roger Keach. They're doing a Her Biz Kent startup workshops. Now they're back. They've already done a few sessions on these and they're going to be starting again in November. So if you are an enterprising lady that wants to start a new business, has some ideas on businesses, then please do, you know, apply. This is going to be a really good free startup program. The closing date for applications for this is actually Wednesday the 11th of November. Mm. As I said, they are free sessions. They will be taking place on Zoom while socially distanced measures are in place, obviously. But so you don't have to sit at home with your mask on.
You could dial into a Zoom meeting without a mask on?
You could. Mm-hmm. And I know the guys at Let's Do Business are a really fantastic group of people. Mm. They really do know their stuff. And it has been a popular program. And they've actually partnered up with NatWest Bank mm-hmm. for this. And it's really trying to increase entrepreneurship locally. And they're offering women in Kent and in East Sussex mm-hmm. a fantastic opportunity to be able to come together, to develop their knowledge, their skills and confidence that they're going to need to launch a successful business. So it's a really, really great initiative. Mm-hmm. They will have so many things within their program. They're going to be looking at, right from the very beginning, you know, how to refine your business ideas, mm-hmm. how to market it, more importantly and close to my heart, managing your finances, and how to really be able to start your business on the right footing. Mm. And they've got lots of different things going on, and they even give you a chance to win £500 towards startup costs. So it's a really great thing. Mm. You have 4 2-hour sessions hosted on Zoom. Mm-hmm. You've got great coaches up in line with this, and it's just a really good thing. So if you really are interested in this mm. and you're a lady out there that's got this burning ambition to set up a business and not quite sure whether or not you should, then by all means, check it out. Because even though we're going through really hard times, there's a lot of businesses out there starting to start up, which is really, really lovely to hear. Yes, it's going to be tough, but to be quite fair, when you're in a group of people like with Let's Do Business and these kind of workshops, it's amazing how much impact and support you get from one another. And sometimes these relationships can last the entire lifetime.
Well said. Yeah, no, I think it's a fantastic initiative. It is very much around, as you say, helping people create a business plan for their business in the first instance. And it will guide you through that process step by step with online coaching. And then at the end of it, as you say, the best business idea will be judged. And somebody will walk away with a £500 cash prize to help them start up their business.
What a great way to be able to, you know.
Brilliant, isn't it?
It is good.
Let's Do Business Group, for people who don't know, they're a not-for-profit business support organisation based down in East Sussex. But on the ground in Kent, we have a brilliant guy called Roger Keach and also a fantastic lady called Lisa.
Yeah, she's brilliant.
Who are on the ground to help you guys with any kind of information or questions that you might have. So what's the closing date for that, Tracy?
The closing date is Wednesday the 11th of November. By all means, check it out. It is on Eventbrite under hers-biz-free-women's-start-up program November 2020. But just Google Let's Do Business. It will all be on there. And also, I have had a conversation with Lisa last week, and I will be doing one of the sessions on finance.
Lisa's surname has escaped me.
Young.
Lisa Young. I'm sorry, Lisa. All of that information is also on one of our websites, Supply My Business.
Yes.
If you have a look in the community section, all of the links, all of the information you need is in there.
Yeah.
Now, that's for ladies, obviously, wanting to start up their own business. But obviously, Let's Do Business Group aren't sexist.
No, they're not.
I have to say, they don't discriminate between between men and women. And they actually have an umbrella startup support program that they offer also to everybody. And through that, they offer online sessions with specialist business advisors, funding and finance experts. You can talk to an accountant. There's a whole range of kind of support packages that Let's Do Business Group offer to startup entrepreneurs in Kent and Sussex. So do check out their website. Do check them out on Supply My Business. They are a Supply My Business member in Kent. And do get in touch. I think, Tracy, at the moment, there's an awful lot of people out there thinking about, you know, and now is a good time to do that, actually.
Yeah.
There's no better time when you're on holiday, perhaps. You can clear the mind and you can actually have a proper think about what it is that you want to do. But there's a lot of people out there at the moment who are kind of looking at this and thinking, you know, this whole kind of crisis and thinking, you know what, I'd be better off working for myself. At least then, you know, I'd have a bit more certainty about my future going forwards. So it doesn't matter whether you're a tradesperson or you want to open perhaps an online cake shop, or I mean, it could, well, we've got cake in the studio.
Yes,
it was Tracy's birthday yesterday, which is why we mentioned cake, because it's staring at us right in the face. That just shows you how the subconscious works,
I'm so sorry.
We went straight to cake as number two there in terms of a business opportunity.
But who doesn't love cake, to be fair? You know, I think the entire nation are cake crazy.
But don't think, crikey, you know, there's loads of cake people out there, or there's loads of plumbers out there. Of course there are. You know, we live in a very highly commoditized world. I think the key thing there is, you know, what are you going to bring to the party? And that's going to be your kind of uniqueness, if you like, that you're going to sell in the marketplace.
Yeah.
So be enthused. And if you are, get in touch with Let's Do Business Group and see how they can help you.
Big,
fantastic,
exciting
stuff.
Isn't
it exciting?
It is.
You and I have been there.
Yep.
We know how exciting it is to kind
it
of
It is. And I really,
up.
As I said before, I really like the fact that some people come up with the most wonderful business ideas. and you know, and to see them grow as well,
yeah,
and work and collaborate with them,
yeah,
it's brilliant.
But it can be a lonely place.
It can be.
You know, the more open you are to, you know, collaborating, sharing, learning from others, you know, that's something that I'm particularly focused on this year. I have a much more open mind about business than perhaps I did in the beginning, but I find that quite exciting because there is so much fantastic learning out there. Let's face it, you know, there's bound to be somebody out there that's been there and done it before you.
Oh, definitely.
So why not learn from them?
Oh yeah, and to be honest, every day's a school day.
There you go.
Yes.
Good.
Yes. And talking of school days, I've got another session coming up. Mm. Simon Morgan from the HR department has a free webinar. Now, this is tomorrow.
Right.
So it is on how to manage flexible and home working. So if you have now found yourself having to work more from home, you're a business where your employees are now having to work from home, this might be a really ideal 45-minute session between 1:15 to 2 tomorrow, and it's looking at how to organise future ways of working, because obviously a lot of us have really changed the way we are working, whether or not it now be at home or sort of like a remotely and things like that. So there's lots of different key considerations which I know Simon will most definitely cover.
Well, we haven't had a lot of choice, have we? The government has said, first of all, they said, well, you can't go to work anymore unless you're a key worker. And then they said, well, you've got to go back to work because, you know, all the delis and, you know, all the kind of smaller shops are really struggling in the big cities. And then they've said, well, actually, we'd like you to work from home again.
So. I know, but I'm sure Simon is going to cover absolutely everything on this. I mean, there's all different types of flexible working arrangements that you can have. You know, how can, you know, you make flexible working requests and, you know, how to consider when reviewing an application for flexible working. Because I think now we've literally, I honestly believe that we have actually brought this thing forward. I think that in the future, like last year, I would have said, well, give it 5 years, we'll probably be a lot more people working from home. But I think COVID has really brought this fast forward to now. And I think a lot of businesses are really finding that they're getting a lot more out of it. And the staff are much better off because they have enough time. They can cook that evening meal and be with their family. They can chuck the washing in the washing machine and walk the dog during their lunch break and things like that. So, you know, but obviously there are certain rules that you have to apply, that, you know, now they're not going to be in an office situation, they're going to be at home. It's how businesses and the individuals that working from home need to make sure that they cover themselves, they know exactly what they need to do and how to adapt the, you know, the ways of working and how they work and make sure that they've got the right, you know, the computer, the right desk, the right chair, because it's the same
as
it would
be.
That's
a really good point, because you're actually just as liable on that level, aren't
Most
you?
Most definitely, yes.
On a kind of health and safety level for someone remote working as you are, you know, if they were in the office.
Oh, yes, because, you know, it's still your responsibility. But so I know for a fact Simon is really good, very, very knowledgeable about all of this stuff. So please, if it's something you're really interested in, want to know a bit more about.
Or perhaps you're having problems with kind of flexible or home working in the workplace at the moment, you know, with your staff, because there's a Q&A, isn't there, as well? So you can always put those questions to Simon and the team on the day.
Exactly. I mean, by all means, please go on the Supply My Business website. It is on there on the community chat. There's links there to go and register. And also, as Martin's just said, that if you've got some really, you know, questions that you really want answers to, then please, please do put it to Simon, because he is absolutely good at what he does. He will be able to give you the right advice. And, you know, I think it's a really good idea, because now I think we're going back into that working from home situation that we need to make sure that everybody is safeguarded one way or another.
Yeah, good. Fantastic. Okay, thanks for that, Tracy. That's brilliant.
My pleasure.
I think what we'll do now is we'll play a little bit more music.
Good.
And then we'll come back and we'll talk about some of the other exciting initiatives that are out there at the moment. So join us after this.
105.9 Academy FM.
Biz Connect.
Promoting and connecting businesses in Kent and around the world.
Tweet us at Kent_biz.
Well, welcome back everybody to Kent Biz Connect today. And so Martin, what have you got that's caught your eye? I know you're very much into the green scheme. So is there anything that's out there that we should be telling people?
Well, I think, you know, going back to the fact that there's going to be lots of people at home this week, one thing that has caught my eye is a new government initiative called the Green Homes Grant Scheme.
Oh, right, yes. This is what they announced quite a few months back, isn't it?
It wasn't that long ago, actually, was it? I think it was Boris announced that, you know, we were going to build back bigger and build back greener and build back this and that and everything else. But one thing that the government have followed through with is the Green Homes Grant Scheme. So this is basically £2 billion of government money, government grant funding, to help homeowners effectively decarbonise their home.
Right.
So, you know, that might be emissions, for example, from things like heating systems that are going out into the atmosphere as greenhouse gases. But it might also be, more importantly, retaining the heat within your home, especially during the winter months. So things like cavity wall insulation, loft insulation, things like that, and secondary measures like double glazing, for example. So if you are a homeowner and you're thinking of having some work done to your home, particularly if it's not a modern home, you know, built to kind of modern building regs. I mean, I live in a 30s home, for example, with cavity walls. You might want to look into this. So I'll give you a little bit of kind of an outline in terms of the scheme. There are two kind of two criteria, really. One is primary and one is secondary. You have to have a primary bit of work done in order to get the secondary, if you like. So primary would include things like wall or loft insulation. As I've said, it might be a low carbon heating system, might be an air source or a ground source, you know, heat pump, heating system. It might be a biomass boiler. But certainly I think, you know, that the former we can all relate to in terms of, you know, wall and loft insulation. Assuming that you have one of those initiatives or that kind of work carried out in your home, you can then go on to have double glazing, replacement double glazing installed as well. As long as the cost of that doesn't exceed the primary project, if you like. And I think where the government is going on that, I think they're saying that roughly 25% of all heat that's lost in a building either goes through the roof or it goes out through the walls. And I think when it comes to windows, I think the heat loss is around about 15%. So they're really trying to encourage homeowners to focus on insulation and heating systems for the future, you know, and then as a secondary measure, obviously things like double glazing. And the government will fund up to 2/3 of the cost of this work.
Yes.
Up to a maximum of £5,000.
Okay.
Unless you are somebody that is, you know, receiving benefits, for example, you know, you might be disabled, you might be receiving income support. And then I believe the grant funding could go up to a maximum of £10,000.
Right, okay.
So, yeah, so in other words, if you were spending £7,500 to get insulation and replacement window work done in your home and perhaps a new low-carbon heating system, the government would fund up to £5,000 of that.
So that's not bad.
It's not insignificant, is it?
It isn't, but obviously the sticking point is that you need to have the insulation then, obviously, before you can have the windows.
You can have it done as part of of the same project.
Yes, but if you've already got insulation and, yeah, and loft insulation...
Mm-hmm. Or cavity wall insulation, yeah, it's not really relevant.
Then it's not relevant. You can't go for the double glazing only.
And there's a lot of people quite upset about that, actually, because, you know, they have made it complicated on that level because, you know, certainly people can... Most people can relate to windows, and even if you've had double glazed, you know, windows in the past, they only have a, you know, I think they have a guarantee of about 10 years typically, don't they, through installers. So they may well need replacing again, patio doors, things like that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, yes, there is a catch. It does come with the, you know, you need to have insulation done, or you need to install, as I said, a low carbon heating system.
Yeah, some of these heating systems, although they're good, can be very pricey.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, but nevertheless, it's still a good thing. It's definitely worth looking into. And I think the next phase of this grant programme will be for, I think there's another £1 billion that's been allocated for public sector buildings as well.
Right, okay,
So that's going to be coming down the line shortly.
Interesting.
And, yeah, Kent County Council, for example, I think they've come out now. You know, we had Rob Robinson from KCC on talking about, you know, the sustainability initiatives that they're spearheading amongst the business community at KCC. But KCC, I think, have committed now to being effectively a zero net carbon estate themselves by 2030. And that means buildings, the services they provide will all be zero net carbon in theory by 2030. So they've set themselves quite an ambitious target there.
Yeah.
But there's bound to be other initiatives that come down the pipe like this. If this one isn't right for you at this moment in time, if it is right for you, you need to have this work done by the end of March next year.
Right, that's interesting.
Yeah, so there's quite a finite time period on this. And you need to have it done, crucially, by a Trustmark accredited tradesperson or company.
Yeah. Okay.
Trustmark is the quality standard that the government have chosen to partner with for this initiative. So, you know, if you have a tradesperson in mind and you would like to get the work done, they need to be Trustmark accredited. Mm. And again, if you have a look at all this information, you can find on gov.uk, but it's also on our Green Business Hub platform. That's greenbusinesshub.eco. And you can find all of the information and the links in there. But yes, crucially, they must be Trustmark accredited.
Yep.
If you don't have a particular tradesperson in mind, you can go onto the Trustmark website and you can look at their business directory.
All right, okay.
And you can find all of the accredited businesses and tradespeople in your area on that website. So, you know, take a look at that as well. But yeah, for some people, this will be tailor-made because, you know, they're in the middle of or they're about to commission this kind of work for their property. For others, it might be, you know, the spur that they need to, you know...
To get it done.
Yeah, to make their home more energy efficient
I must admit, cavity wall insulation and all that completely changes the home.
I bet,
because I've had it done. I had it done about 5 years ago, and it just changed so, and it's just so much nicer and warmer, and it does, you know, it does retain the heat a lot more, especially when, you know, apparently I saw this morning that because we've got loads of berries on the trees, it's going to be a really, really cold winter.
Oh, right.
So, if you're...
Thanks.
Thanks for that cheery note. If you're in need of insulation in your home to keep yourself warm this winter, I'd crack on and get on and get on to this initiative.
Okay. Well, while we're on the subject of green, and I think, you know, what you were talking about earlier also has a very green tinge to it in terms of, you know, people working from home and not commuting and not getting in their cars and driving every day. So everything is kind of clearly going in that direction. But the council have another fantastic initiative out there called Kent Revs.
And, oh, yes.
Mm, so perhaps you are a small tradesperson. You might be an electrical engineer or a heating and plumbing engineer, for example. And, you know, obviously you rely on your van to get you to and from jobs. KCC would love you to try an electric van. Mm. And they would love you to try that for a couple of months, free of charge, at their expense.
Wow.
Yeah. So if that's something that kind of floats your boat and you're interested in, perhaps you're thinking about replacing your van, then why not think about...
Try one out.
Exactly.
Try see how it goes.
Try before you buy. Try an electric option before you kind of make a commitment there. So... Mm. That project is now live with KCC. And again, you can find out all the information about that on the greenbusinesshub.eco platform. And there is a link through there to the to KCC's own Low Carbon Kent website, where you can basically sign up and get involved in that trial. But what a fantastic initiative.
Oh, I think it's really good. Mm. Definitely try before you buy, because, you know, you want to be able to know whether or not it's going to be suitable for your business.
How many miles are you going to get out of it? Is
well,
it practical?
Exactly.
Yeah, look into it at the very least. It's something that, you know, not just for kind of commercial vehicles, but on a personal level, I know a lot more people are kind of looking at the electric
hybrids
option.
And stuff like that, yes.
And the cost is coming down all the
it
time.
It is, actually. Yes, you're right.
So, yeah, do take a look at that. And I know Jackie Offen, who's coming on later, runs a fleet
yes,
of
she does,
Zoes,
doesn't she?
I think, which are Renault electrical vehicles. So for her team when they're out visiting clients. So, yeah, perhaps we'll quiz her a little
quiz
bit more
on
about that.
Yes.
Yeah. Great. Tracy, I think that kind of wraps up all the business news.
Yes.
I think what we need to do is play a little bit more music and get our first guest on, shall we?
Yes, let's do that.
And who have we got on first today?
We've got Kevin Artlett from Pecunia.
Fantastic.
He's waiting in the wings, all nervous.
Brilliant. So we'll play a little bit of music and we'll be straight back after this.
105.9 Academy FM.
Biz Connect.
Promoting and connecting businesses in Kent and around the world.
Tweet us at Kent_biz.
We have our first guest on the show today. Good afternoon, Kevin.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Wonderful to speak to you, although I do speak to you every day. But so you're on the radio today to really tell everybody about what we do as Pecunia.
Okay.
So what are we?
To it.
What are we all about then, Kevin?
Well, what are we all about? Good question. We're all about help and guidance and support to businesses and business owners, really in the field of managing their sort of credit management and really focusing in particular on building up relationships, helping businesses to maximise their sales, increase their profits, and minimise disputes and bad debts, which can obviously impact on the cash coming into the business. How do we do this? Well, it's a proactive approach that we take to make sure customers pay on time without anyone upsetting the customer. We are all about building relationships, maintaining relationships. We don't promote aggressive and sort of too firm behaviour.
Yeah.
We believe in every aspect that communication and talking with customers is the key to building more business for yourselves, but also helping maintain your customers' profits and also like longevity as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm always going on about communication, especially at this moment in time during COVID. And I've been preaching that obviously we need to make sure that businesses talk more to their clients, talk more to their suppliers, because obviously supply chain, as we all know, is extremely important for businesses. And I know that obviously, you know, we've helped a lot of businesses in the past, Kevin. I mean, do you want to give sort of like a little bit of a case study of something that we've done?
Yeah, I've got a couple of things that spring to mind. A year to 2 years ago, we started to help a fairly large independent builders merchant based in Kent. And we met with the team, met with the financial director, looked at some of their processes and procedures, the way they managed their credit accounts and even their cash over-the-counter accounts. And we put forward some suggestions about building a credit policy, a document which I think every business should have. It doesn't matter how big or small you are. It just lays down some guidelines for, you know, showing how you're going to be taking on customers and dealing with them. And with this particular business, we then implemented this credit control policy.
Mm-hmm.
We helped train some of the staff.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most pleasing aspects of that all round was about 4 months after implementation, we received a call from the FD to say that this had increased their cash flow by just under £500,000 in that 4 month period. It just made everything much more watertight, much more robust. There was no negative impact on the customers whatsoever.
Mm.
But, you know, behind the scenes, they were getting everything together as far as knowing who the customer is, building relationships. As I say, when somebody was buying some goods, is finding out about their invoice approval and authorization process, when their payment runs are, and working your credit terms around that.
Yeah.
And then knowing that they're buying some products, you could then maybe sort of cross-sell and, you know, offer other products. And so, again, it increases the business, it increases sales, increases profits. That was one that really stuck out because of the financial impact on this particular company.
Yeah.
And I think another one that we had was, again, a smaller business, but they were struggling to collect payments. And we really found that the crux of this really was behind the fact that they didn't quite know, have a process in place for taking on new customers. They took telephone orders, almost immediately sent the goods out without really checking where they were they a partnership, were they a sole trader, were they a limited company, and suddenly not knowing who you're dealing with provides potential problems, especially when it tries to you try to come and collect the payment.
That seems like a pretty fundamental thing to have in place, Kevin, for most businesses, you know, a credit management policy, I think you referred to it as, and formal process, because then everybody in the business knows how the business operates on that level, don't they? And you know, problems will be flagged up that much sooner than perhaps, you know, a business that is a little bit more kind of fly by the wire and maybe only looks at the kind of the bank statement once a month to then realize that a customer, you know, hasn't paid them from the previous month or, you know, whatever it is. It's it really does help to kind of run your business and make it that much tighter, doesn't it?
Martin, you're absolutely right. And like I say, these don't need to be too onerous. We've probably written credit policies on behalf of businesses ranging from just under a page for a small locksmith up to about 30 odd pages for obviously a major organisation with multi sites. But you are correct. And what really helps is that we recognise that there are many businesses in our county and throughout the UK that don't necessarily have the need to employ someone on a credit control basis full time. We sometimes find that this could be part of a person's job for maybe one or two days a week, maybe, you know, a bit less than that. And occasionally we see that business owners sort of give this job to somebody who doesn't really want to be necessarily on the telephone. They're a bit nervous about asking Bill about the statement that went out a couple of months ago that hasn't yet been paid. And we believe that this credit policy helps to raise the profile of how important credit management is. And like I say, it lays down the procedures for taking on customers, how you deal with these customers on a proactive basis for collections, how you then follow through in the event of any queries or disputes, and then ultimately a collection sort of process. The worst case scenario, escalating it to debt collectors or legal.
And at the very least, I guess, Kevin, you know, things like payment terms should be on your invoice.
They should, but that is not the first time that the customer should see them. You are absolutely right, Martin, they should be on the invoice. But it is most important, this know your customer, the take-on form or the credit application form, which is all part of the credit policy. We believe that customers should complete that and sign their agreement. It can all be done online. It's very quick and simple to agree to your terms. I must stress, if the first time they see your your payment terms are on the invoice, that can be a little bit late.
Yes, yeah. And I guess it's important to set that out from, you know, from the beginning, from the very beginning, because then, you know, it will hopefully avoid those kind of awkward conversations later on down the line when perhaps an invoice is late. Because actually, you know, the business that you're doing business with, that you've supplied goods or services to, is fully aware of your trading terms and conditions before they engage with you. And therefore, it shouldn't come as a surprise to them when somebody from that company picks up the phone and rings them to ask for payment. Because all of that was agreed up front.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right. And when we find that people are a little bit wary, a bit worried about calling and asking for payment, you are really asking for no more than your customer's side of the agreement.
Yes.
Your side was to provide the goods or services, you know, in a timely fashion, in good order, in good packaging, etc. And their obligation as part of that contract is to pay you as per the terms. So, you know, don't be afraid to pick up the telephone.
Yeah.
Engage in conversation. There's lots of ways in which, and we help this with our training, in showing people and advising people how to conduct a collections call. You know, it's not a question of going straight to the knuckle and demanding payment or else. There's a lot more to it. Engaging and listening, finding out about your customers' processes, finding out if they have any potential issues. I mean, obviously, COVID has had a major impact, as we know, on cash flow. And for example, Martin, you may not necessarily be able to follow your credit management policy to the letter of the law at the moment. You may have to allow some flexibility for your customers to pay maybe over you know, 2 or 3 month period rather than, you know, pay you all in one go. And this is the only way that customers and suppliers are going to be able to work together. And it goes back to what Tracy was saying about communication is key at this time.
It is, yeah. Well, I totally agree.
I think what we'll do, Kevin, we're going to play a little bit of music now.
Okay.
But then when we come back, what I'd like to do is try and talk about some of the avenues that are open to you if somebody hasn't paid you, and what you can do about it, and what kind of channels and perhaps, you know, routes you can go down to recover your monies. Because I think, you know, that's bound to be a problem that's kind of high on people's radar at the moment as well. So,
absolutely.
We're going to play a little bit of music then, and we'll be straight back after this.
Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to Biz Connect. And we're going to continue our interview with Kevin Artlett from Pecunia. Thank you for joining us again, Kevin. We've been talking previously about what businesses should be looking at, how to safeguard their credit management and everything else. But what specifically would you actually give advice to or give guidance to for business owners on how to collect debt themselves?
Okay. I think it's quite a good way sometimes to compare what the consumer credit industry does to the trade credit industry. You and I may well know that if we default on a credit card payment or a loan or a mortgage repayment, those companies are on us immediately, the banks and so on, you know, with a late payment fee or worse sometimes. And I think sometimes when we look at business to business, they don't always quite react as quickly as they should. And time is of the essence. So I think that if your customers missed the payment date, it may well be oversight. It may well be they're busy. It may be part of the COVID impact. So a gentle nudge or gentle reminder. I would always on the side of caution, but I would make a phone call. I'm sure this is an oversight, friendly call, just reminding you that payment was due last week. You don't appear to have it. Can you just let us know what's going on? And often that will, you know, flush out the problem, if there is a problem. Could be to do with a query, the quality, the service, or it could be obviously something to do with cash flow. Mm. And once you know that, you can then adjust your stance accordingly. Mm. And I think this is important. Now, if that doesn't work, you may then maybe make a second phone call, or maybe send a second reminder, which is maybe a little bit more, serious. Mm. We're not threatening any legal action here.
Mm.
But you've got to act quite quickly. I think telephone is still the best way.
Yeah.
People, I think, can misunderstand emails.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen more issues with people misinterpreting what the tone of an email was meant to be against what it actually says.
Mm.
And calls are good things to do. And you really want to, from that, build that relationship. It could be that your customer can't afford to pay everybody every month, but you want to make sure that you are at least in that group of mm. companies that will get paid. And I think this is the key thing, but understand, listen to what they're saying, empathize with them, try to help them through if it's a short-term cash flow problem. It will help both you and the customer, and it will foster great relationships going forward for hopefully a more profitable long-term business mm. relationship.
I mean, it's like what I've always said when I've done some of the training things that we've done and the talks, it's always about conversation, communication and commitment, because you need to have them three C's realistically, understand what your client is going through, and then get a commitment from them.
You're absolutely right, Tracy, and communication, commitment is absolutely vital. I think we've had some experiences in the last few months as a result of COVID, where people obviously have been very concerned that they're not getting paid. Sometimes they've not actually been able even to contact the customer. Mm. And those that are worried about getting paid, they've also been worried about phoning them up. So we've been asked on a couple of occasions to, I suppose, if you like, almost mediate.
Mm.
We've been asked to step in to make a call on behalf of the supplier to the customer to see if we can help facilitate payment.
Mm.
And I think that has been a useful way. And I think the Small Business Commissioner, Philip King,
mm.
somebody who we know very well from
yeah.
the Chartered Institute of Credit Management, he advocates a lot of this sort of process on their website, and they are also worth contacting as well.
Mm. Most definitely.
I was going to say, when it does go wrong, Kevin, obviously, it, the chances are it may well go wrong spectacularly
mm.
in terms of a breakdown of relationship, between supplier and customer, for example. So, what are the kind of avenues open to businesses to seek recompense, as it were, for goods and services provided in good faith in that instance? I mean, you mentioned the Small Business Commissioner and that team. In fact, we had Philip King on a couple of months ago. What other kind of avenues are open to people?
A good question there, Martin, as well. And I think sometimes people may not always be aware. What you can do, first of all, we would always advocate, if possible, to include in your terms and conditions that you reserve the right to charge late payment interest and compensation under the Late Payment of Commercial Debts Act. It doesn't matter if your T's and C's are actually silent on this issue. Because it is an actual statute, it's an act of Parliament, then any business can actually charge interest to any other business via that act. Okay, it increases the debt, I appreciate that. But I think sometimes the threat of that can actually flush out payment from a customer, perhaps, who is a bit hesitant and maybe is trying to hold on to the cash as long as possible.
Mm.
If that fails, you would need to, as I said, send maybe a letter one, letter two that I talked about a bit earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And then you may need to send what we call a letter before action or final demand,
mm-hmm.
giving the customer at least 7 days. If the customer is a sole trader, you actually have to give a longer period of mm-hmm. time, 30 days, under the pre-action protocols.
Mm.
And if that time expires and they've not paid you, what you can then do is either pass the debt to a debt collection agency or maybe a firm of solicitors, or you can actually use the government website, the Money Claims Online. It's very simple here to be able to issue a claim online and conduct it all yourself. People do get a bit off, sort of put off by that, thinking, oh, no, technology, and I'm worried about the court system. But it is quite simple to do.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Kevin, we have run out of time, unfortunately.
Okay.
And time does fly. Just give us a shout out for how people can get in touch with Pecunia, if you can, in order to kind of to pick your brains in terms of credit management policy and process, and perhaps recovering some of these outstanding monies.
Certainly. Well, contact us on the website, which is www.pecunia2016.co.uk. Alternatively, you can email us at info@pecunia2016.co.uk, and you can follow us on LinkedIn,
Twitter.
Yeah,
Facebook, all over social
media. We've just
got
a new Instagram account
as well.
But importantly, you also offer a free initial consultation for businesses, don't you? I think you'll spend an hour with them, understanding their credit management process, offering advice and insight in terms of how that can be improved as well.
Absolutely. And it's no obligation, no fee involved for that.
Brilliant.
And it's totally confidential.
Fantastic. Well, Kevin, look, thank you so much for coming on. You've been absolutely brilliant. I've certainly learnt a lot. And we look forward to catching up with you again in the very near future.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, brilliant. Kevin.
Thanks,
cheers.
Kevin. Bye for now.
Bye.
105.9 Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Biz Connect radio show with Tracy Westall and myself, Martin White. Tracy, we've been talking to Kevin Artlett just before the break, all about credit management.
Yes.
Credit management process, cash flow, how important all of these things are to business survival.
Do you know what? It is so true. And I had a conversation last week with a couple of people that I did a seminar with, and they said, well, you know, you're like the cog in the wheel of business. And I said, no, we're more important than that. We're actually the pin that holds that cog in that wheel to make all the cogs go round all smoothly.
Lovely. Fantastic.
So, yeah.
Yeah. But I think what we're going to do, we're going to play a little bit more music, and
yes,
then we're going to come back and we're going to talk to our second guest today.
It's Jackie
Offen from J&J Systems, based over in Hurston near Canterbury.
105.9 Academy FM.
Biz Connect.
Promoting and connecting businesses in Kent and around the world.
Tweet us at Kent_biz.
Welcome back again to Biz Connect with Tracy Westall and myself, Martin White. We're delighted to be joined now on the telephone by our second guest today, Jackie Offen from J&J Systems. Jackie, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
It's lovely afternoon. It's lovely to have you with us.
It's a pleasure, Martin, as always.
Now, Jackie, we've been talking about lots of things today, but we started the conversation at the top of the show all around the kind of the theme of flexible and home working, but we were looking at that very much from a sort of an HR angle. So just for the benefit of everybody out there, tell us who J&J Systems are, if you can, and what you've been doing in that space to help businesses that perhaps can't be in the office at the moment. So tell us a little bit about J&J Systems.
Well, we're an IT service provider that we've been going for about 22 years now, long time.
Wow.
And obviously the face of IT has changed quite a lot in that period of time. And we support businesses across Kent and the South East. Anything from an individual sole trader with a laptop right up to multiple site businesses with 100 users. So a vast spectrum and a vast spectrum of support, I suppose. And of course, from the early days of COVID, although many of our clients did work from home, most of them wanted to move all their staff out of the office and take them to a home working environment. So we've been busy helping people with supplying laptops and secure methods of communication and ensuring that data and staff remain safe and secure across all of the relevant locations.
Yeah, you mentioned that you've been going for 22 years, you said?
1998.
God, and you said yourself that technology has changed quite a little bit in that time. So I guess the whole kind of concept of remote working just wouldn't have been on the cards 22 years ago, because you wouldn't have been able to connect people in the way that you can today through the cloud, through the internet.
Right back then, not when we had modems to connect to machines, but
then the things that used to whistle. Yeah,
that's right. It wasn't. I think I was one of Tesco's Home Shopping first ever users, and that was terribly slow. So, I mean, home working did happen even before this role. We did used to be able to connect to machines, but it was very slow. But then the applications in use back then were very different, and they didn't have the same graphical interfaces that they do now, and people didn't have the same expectations.
Yeah, I remember when things like ISDN lines came in, and because I worked in the...
Oh, look at you showing your age.
I know, because I worked in the creative industries, you see, so... You know, we went from sort of pasting up physical artwork for advertising or brochures or whatever it might be, and colour marking it up and all that kind of stuff, to ISDN, which enabled us to send artwork down the line to printers and things like that. And that was really the start of it for me, I guess.
Yeah, it certainly changed very quickly. And actually, I'd say probably over the COVID period, there have been many businesses that I never thought would embrace home working, have embraced it and migrated their staff out of the office, and working practices have changed forever.
Mm. Yeah.
That's an interesting point then. So what do you think was the kind of barrier before to home working, and where obviously now that barrier can't exist because many businesses don't actually have a choice? What do you think was the barrier to kind of embracing that before, Jackie?
I think there's many barriers that were there. I mean, for some people, it's a procedural barrier because they can't imagine working from home. They don't want to lose the team feeling. They don't want to lose the office environment. For others, it's that they couldn't understand how somebody could not work at their desk with all their paperwork and so on, and that they need. Perhaps they've moved to a more digital-based filing system rather than a physical paper-based filing system. So people have had to change their work practices. If you think people have got up and gone home and they've left behind all their files, I mean, I'm speaking from personal experience, I don't think I haven't seen my desk barely at all in the last 6 months or so, and I haven't needed any of those files.
And I guess a lot of businesses have come to realise that they don't need to have physical eyes on people to reassure that they are actually doing a job of work remotely.
Maybe. I mean, my staff, we've come up with lots of ways of managing the business. We have a video meeting every morning before the day starts. We have a weekly team meeting as well on video. So we've done things like that, which perhaps we wouldn't have done previously. And we certainly wouldn't have spoken all together collectively on a daily basis like we do now. And that's a method of managing people. But, I mean, for one, I find it very difficult. I'm a people person. I like to see all of the staff and the team and talk to them face-to-face and hear what's going on in the office and know that Mrs. Miggins just phoned up on the telephone, a particular client, or... You know, understand what conversations are being had, and that's quite difficult when you're sitting miles away and I can see the lights flashing on the phone, but I don't know what the conversations are. Now, we've got systems in place which keep me informed of that, but not every business does, so I can see that some businesses would feel detached from their workforce.
Yeah, no, it's not the kind of solution for all, is it? It's not a sort of a blanket solution that all businesses can or want to embrace necessarily. But from your point of view, in terms of how you've been working with clients to kind of facilitate that more. You mentioned things like laptops, for example. Has that meant that you've had to go out and buy hundreds of thousands of laptops for clients that didn't previously furnish their employees with laptops? What's been the reality of that?
Hundreds of thousands would be a bit of an extreme, but we certainly do. We have done short-term rentals for clients to allow them to send their staff home in a short-term basis.
Mm-hmm.
And we've also sold a lot of laptops. And initially, at the outset, there was a bit of a shortage of supply because hardware was ring-fenced for NHS workers and so on. So it was quite difficult in the early days.
Mm.
But people now have sort of realised that perhaps some of their staff will continue to work at home, maybe, you know, they needed to be shielded or they're particularly vulnerable. So they've, employers have adapted remarkably well. I think there's an issue around people thinking that laptops in the future are the only way that people can work from home, because it's essential that you have the correct height monitor and you have the correct keyboard and correct seating position.
Yeah, we were talking about some of that, weren't we, Tracy, in terms of health and safety obligations and things like that.
As an employer, you still have all those obligations.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of employers forget that. I think they've given them a laptop and away they go. But you know, if they're sitting on a dining room chair at the dining room table, that's not an ideal seating position.
No.
To work with a piece of equipment. So in the long term, employers, if they are going to have staff working from home, they've really got to think hard about those conditions and do an assessment of that.
And when it comes to setting people up, you know, employees at home, I mean, have you had to do sort of physical visits to, you know, to plug things like routers in, or are you, I mean, are people using, you know, their existing wireless network and sort of remote working that way, or?
Mixture of things. I mean, we have to do risk assessments for every site visit now, which for COVID purposes as well as for all the normal reasons. But yes, I mean, there's a variety of things. We do a lot of troubleshooting with Wi-Fi at home particularly because, of course, it's fine when there was just one person working at home all day and no kids, but suddenly you had kids on tablets and downloading stuff from Netflix and TVs using Amazon Music and all of these different things.
So bandwidth issues,
bandwidth issues.
Yeah.
And so you might have a reasonably good speed fibre to the cabinet connection at home, but then you put all of these other devices into the mix and suddenly, actually, you're not really getting the performance that you want.
And then, of course, the last thing you want is feedback from people saying, yeah, I can't work, you know, it's not working, I haven't, you know, my internet's too slow or whatever it is, then that's going back to the, you know, the head of IT at the company, and then you're getting it in the neck because, you know, the system isn't working. So I guess you have to kind of jump on that fairly quickly.
Do you know, actually, the people who are mostly at fault are generally the bosses of the businesses. Most of the employees never moan about things going slowly because they can go make a cup of tea, but the boss doesn't always believe that it's because his kids are streaming stuff on Netflix that they've got no bandwidth.
Or fair enough. Yeah.
Rather than using Wi-Fi, we usually say just run a cable from the router because that actually will probably solve 90% of the problems
anyway.
Yes,
that is true. Well, look, Jackie, I think what we'll do is we're going to play a little bit of music now. And then we're going to come back and talk about some of these more practical issues and considerations that employers need to be aware of, you know, when we're talking about sort of remote working when we come back. So bear with us and we'll be back after this.
105.9 Academy FM.
BizConnect. Promoting and connecting businesses in Kent and around the world. Tweet us at Kent_biz.
Well, hello again, and we're delighted that we've got the fabulous Jackie Offen from J&J Systems on the line with us at the moment. Jackie, lovely to have you with us.
Thank you. Fabulous.
We've been talking about remote working and the challenges of facilitating remote working for employers with things like laptops and wireless connections and you know, other people making demands on the infrastructure, you know, whether it be children or families all at home all at the same time. So it's not necessarily it doesn't always go as smoothly as it might do. But there are some other kind of quite important considerations as well, aren't there, I think, for employers when it comes to things like cybersecurity, the general data protection regulation, things like that. So just in your own words, give us an overview of the challenges that kind of remote working throw up in that context, if you can.
Well, I mean, from a business owner point of view, I think one of the biggest things is ensuring that any equipment that people are using to connect to office systems are protected correctly, and that the, for example, that the member or the employee knows that they shouldn't let the kids go on there and use it for doing their homework and browsing various sites, you know, war game sites and so on and so forth. Instead, they should be keeping that piece of equipment separate wherever they can. And from an employer point of view, when you're using a notebook or any piece of equipment at home and you are downloading things, I mean, even just clicking on a document and clicking on download, of course, generally it will download to your local drive. That means that on your local drive, even if it's a home machine, you've potentially got business data, you've got potentially got personal information that's then being stored, however short for and however temporary. But unless you go and delete that information, or unless you manage that information, it will start to get more and more and more. And so from a business point of view, there are a lot of GDPR considerations which have to be taken into account, as well as the security aspects.
Yeah, I would imagine quite a few businesses sort of like have it's been the last thing on their list to think about these things that assume a lot of people are just coming to really realise that, oh, these documents are downloading into a place where they really shouldn't be, or there's no sort of process in saying, right, you've got to delete it all and things like that. So that's quite interesting.
Yeah, I don't think people have a process. And, of course, as you said, it's the last thing on their mind. They sent people home with a laptop and just expected them to get on with it. I think as time passes, there's going to be a few issues. Hard drives are going to get full of things that they shouldn't be there. And, of course, people, like I say, they let the kids go on there and carry on using it without even thinking about the fact that they've left their business system logged on, that their emails are open on their machine and so on and so forth. And there's a lot of security considerations to be had when using a machine at home, especially if it's shared.
The more you think about it, actually, the more you sort of you realise that in your sort of day to day,
you're opening a can of worms.
You
really
know, keeping sort of personal and business separate on a, you know, on a business provided, you know, computer is actually you have to consciously do that, don't you? You have to make a conscious effort to do that. I mean, as business owners, we tend to do both quite naturally. You know, we'll kind of, you know, we'll look at the news on the BBC and then the next minute we'll be, you know, back into a work document, you know, as you say, saved on a local drive with a backup inevitably, but nevertheless saved on a local drive. But it's a bit of a different kettle of fish, isn't it, when you're actually running a business and you've got employees working from home. Is that where you come in, Jackie? Is that an important part of what you do, helping businesses create the process, the documentation that they can then give to their staff to tell them how they need to operate safely when working remotely and working from home?
Because every business is different, we have a tendency to have some fairly global processes which we try and train everybody on. So all of our clients' employees are able to come on our training courses that we provide. There's one which covers productivity, which looks at where things are stored and gives people a really good awareness of how they can work in a more secure manner. And then there's a very specific cyber awareness course which our trainer runs through with every employee, everybody who's an employee of one of our clients, to ensure that they're aware of the dangers within working on computers and email and cyber security. So we have specific training that we do. It is we try and help our clients prepare for the cyber essentials accreditation for small businesses as well, or large businesses too, but the smaller businesses, that's something that gives them really good belt and braces security, sort of basic security for their business to ensure that they're covered.
Yeah,
the actual processes they have to write themselves, but I mean, I always will offer advice for them.
Mm.
Mm. That's a really good point, because, you know, flicking, you know, again, going back to what we were talking about, you know, he doesn't have a Hotmail account or a Google email account or whatever email account in their personal lives. And, you know, you're on your computer, you're on your work's computer working from home, you know, tapped into a Sky wireless connection, whatever it might be. And then, you know, you flick between personal email perhaps and work email, and but you're on a work provided you know, computer, then you click on a what looks like an innocent email in your Hotmail account, for example, and then all of a sudden you've downloaded some spyware or what, you know, some kind of virus. It's so easily done.
I know,
done,
you're telling me
it?
What you did last week, Martin. Here, I know. Yes.
I've clearly just gone through the pain of this, haven't I? Still
it's
fresh
still
in the mind. But the point is, it's so easily done, isn't it? Without the training that you're talking about, without the education, without the process in the business, these things are going to happen all the time, aren't they?
Absolutely. It's so important that people are aware of those dangers. And the staff at home, how many of them don't just flick over to Facebook and have a little browse, or you know, generally speaking, have a little poke about in their Hotmail account or whatever. All of those things, they can be invariably quite dangerous.
Risky,
when you're on a work machine dealing with work that's connected to a data network that needs to really be secure.
I'm going to change tack slightly now, Jackie, if I can, because I want to talk about the fantastic work I know you do as a dementia champion, and the fundraising work that you do. And you would normally be running, and I think this year you would normally be running your massive fundraising ball at the Cathedral Lodge, but obviously you're not able to. Just talk to us a little bit about the work that you do in that space, raising money and the frustrations of not being able to kind of do that in the same way this year.
It was a very difficult year because 2020 was set to be, for me, one of a really big year fundraising for the Alzheimer's Society. And I was looking forward to the ball. As you say, it was going to be at the Cathedral Lodge, and it's always on the Armistice weekend. It's a massive thing, and it's quite heartbreaking not to be able to do it. There's been a few events all through the year which have been cancelled, and I'm not really sure where the future of fundraising goes for a lot of the charities. They're having to do a lot remotely and a lot of virtual things, which really changes it. But I'm a people person. I like the balls and the
as do we,
walks and everything.
Yeah.
Martin, I think you've been to pretty much every event that I've done.
The last one I came to, I think, not last year, the year before, you raised, what was it, £7,500 on the night?
Yeah, that's right.
That's
amazing.
And there's going to be, as you say, so many charities out there at the moment who rely on people like you, foot soldiers, to use their own initiative to create events and promotions to raise money. And they're going to really be suffering at the moment from that, aren't they?
Yeah, they really are. Yes, I'm not really sure how I change that, because all of the things I've done in the past have all been, you know, we had an event at Mount Ephraim Gardens. We have the event every other year at Cathedral Lodge. They're all based around music and enjoyment and people having a lot of fun whilst raising money for
a good dementia cause. Well, we hope that you'll be able to bounce back and perhaps
it's booked for next year, Martin.
Do it next year, I was going to say.
Booked for next year.
Yeah. Fantastic.
And I just have to try and get the raffle prizes organised. So, I mean, that's always the most difficult thing, getting people to sponsor the raffle prize.
Yeah, of course.
Selling the tickets is the easy bit.
Yeah, but quite often people will know or be part of an organisation that's able to donate a prize, won't they? Whether you know, whether it's a four ball at a golf club or whatever it might be. So,
Absolutely.
No, do keep us in the loop about that.
And, don't worry, you're on the list.
Fantastic. And we'll, obviously, I think, Tracy, you should come along to that as well.
Yes, so. That'd be really, really good. I mean, it is a cause close to my heart.
But it's a great evening as well. And you know, it's full of sort of, you know, people you'd like to meet in the business community as well. You know, it's a great networking opportunity as well.
I find a networking opportunity for local businesses.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a good opportunity to get your sequined posh frock out as well.
Yes.
That's to Martin, isn't it?
Well, it is normally on the weekend, so, yeah. Jackie, thank you so much for coming on the show and telling telling us more about J&J Systems and the challenging work that you're doing with clients at the moment in terms of keeping them safe and keeping them productive, crucially, you know, making sure that, you know, their business is able to carry on, you know, operating and ultimately being profitable and making money. So it's really, really important.
Yeah.
Just give us a shout out, if you can, Jackie, for J&J Systems. How can we get in touch with you if we've got, you know, questions or concerns in that area? You know, what's the best way to kind of get in contact with you?
Probably emailing. support@jjsystems.co.uk and then that will get sent on to me, or phoning the office 01227 371 375. You take a good look at the website. It's full of cartoons and lots of fun and bright colours, trying to make IT interesting and fun
and useful blogs though as well, and information,
useful blogs on my soapbox.
You
can go there. That's www.jjsystems.co.uk.
Brilliant.
Fabulous.
Fantastic. Well, for now, thank you so much for being with us today. Lovely to talk to you. We wish you well for your fundraising efforts over the next 12 months. As you say, it would have been next weekend, I guess. We'd have all been gathering, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would have been.
But we'll be there next year, and we'll be there in spirit this year. So, thank you, Jackie.
Thank you, Jackie.
We'll catch up with you again soon.
Well, what a great show we've had this week. We're going to be back in 2 weeks' time on the 9th of November.
November?
I know, not long till Christmas. Oh,
and it's going to be dark tonight, isn't it?
It is.
5 o'clock or something?
I know. But I want to thank our guests, Jackie from J&J Systems, and obviously Kevin from Pecunia.
Weren't they brilliant?
Brilliant.
So much knowledge there.
Oh, I know. Mm. We're all brainy.
Fantastic, yeah.
But as I say, have a good fortnight, guys, in business, and we will both see you on the 9th of November.
And enjoy your half-term break. Bye for now.
Bye for now.
105.9 Academy FM.
BizConnect. Promoting and connecting businesses in Kent and around the world. Tweet us at Kent_biz.